A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. This is a true story. Welcome to the world of Fargo. My name is Howell. My compadre Jamie is joining us shortly. The reason you have to wait for him tonight is, he says, because his father-in-law is there and he's waiting for him to leave. However, Jamie is a huge Wimbledon fan, and as has just been pointed out to me by our other guest tonight from London, very near Wimbledon, Matthew Wandless, Wimbledon is happening and there is a game on tenterhooks. Who is the game, Matthew, at the moment?
Well, the game has literally just finished about 45 seconds ago.
Okay, so if Jamie turns up in the next minute, right, we know what's really happening. And I mean, he's a diehard Wimbledon fan.
Really? Well, you'd have to be a diehard fan to really care about this match. I've never heard of either of these players.
Right, yeah, he is. Well, he is. I've just started a timer. If Jamie appears in the next minute, there's some serious questioning to be had. Tonight, though, we are talking about Fargo. Now, many moons ago, Matthew Wandless came on this podcast as a guinea pig. And if you've never heard this podcast before, it works like this. One or a number of us have only watched one episode of something. They'll be joined together with one or a number of us who have watched the entire series and are passionate about it. And it's our job to try and persuade that guinea pig to continue, or at least to work out whether it's going to be for them, whether they should invest their time and get to the all-important fourth episode. So let's bear in mind now that Fargo is on its third season, it's back, and Matthew Wandless came on here months ago to talk about Fargo, the first season. He'd watched one episode. What was the result of that podcast, Matt? Did you say that you were going to continue watching Fargo?
No, I don't think I did. No, I definitely didn't continue. But
there we go.
I can't really remember why I didn't. It just didn't grab me.
Now, we mentioned that we were doing Fargo this week, and Matthew Wandless's comment was Fargo. Now. Why that comment? Let's see if we can do a better job tonight. Why ugh? Yeah.
Just because... Well, am I correct in thinking that this series has Ewan McGregor in it?
That's correct.
That's just... For me, that is just... I can't... I mean, obviously, I can think of worse things, you know, but for the sake of... I really dislike Ewan McGregor as an actor.
What?
Oh, really? Have we not revealed this before?
I don't think so. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. The bucket of scorn is always close to hand with Matthew Wandless, but I can't remember it being poured on Ewan McGregor before. Why do you dislike Ewan McGregor?
I just find him... I don't think I've ever believed him in a role. Okay. And obviously, like, I think I should preface every episode that I do of this show with, like, there is a base level of, like, admiration, respect, and affinity that I feel with any actor or any creative who has gotten to the point where they've made things.
Yeah.
So when I say this is with all due respect that I don't think I've ever fully believed Ewan McGregor in any role that I've seen him in. He doesn't do it for me at all. He, every time I see him, he's got these big wide eyes and I feel like they always look the same in every part that he plays. And he's just so crushingly earnest in his performance. And it never rings true to me.
Is it possible that this is kin to when people say, oh, Tom Hanks plays the same part in every film.
It's nothing to do with that, because Hanks doesn't play the same character in every film, and he's different. Hanks is brilliant.
But you know what I mean? When people accuse people who are, they're not character actors in the sense of putting on a whole different cloak. They just extend themselves in slightly different directions every role.
I don't care if people do that. It's if they do that and they do it well, then I will, I'll love them. I'm absolutely fine with that.
Jim Carrey.
Sure.
Like Jim Carrey?
Not in everything, no.
See, I put him in that same box, you see, but in a different way, you know.
Okay. But, though, for me, Ewan McGregor, I don't think he does the same thing all the time. I just don't think I think he has the same fault in every performance that he does. Oh God, I'm such a pompous man. How can I say that? But that's how I feel about it.
My job is so much easier when you insult yourself. It's kind of less fun though.
But I've seen him do some real turkeys. I mean, obviously he's terrible as in the Star Wars films. The first time I realized I really didn't like him was when everyone was going on about him in Moulin Rouge.
Right.
And I watched that and I was just like, just have a different facial expression at some point.
But that's his face. That's his face.
I know everyone's stuck with a face howl, but everyone can pull different expressions. And that's how you convey how you're feeling. That's what you use. It's your TV screen. That's how you show yourself.
I think when Satine dies in Moulin Rouge and Ewan McGregor loses his shit, there is more than one expression being displayed, and they're very good. I think he's great. I love Ewan McGregor.
Fair enough.
Well,
and who am I to question that?
Well, that's fair enough. I do get what you're saying about Ewan McGregor. My route into Ewan McGregor was this. I went to drama school, and a director that I worked with quite closely there and a bit afterwards had taught him at drama school and directed him in a couple of things. And Jamie is ready. And Jamie is ready. And the clock says...
Right, we can stop stalling. We can stop
6 minutes.
We can stop this aimless filler about Ewan McGregor.
But I felt like I always saw him as somebody from a different drama school who had managed to start making these huge things. And that, in a way, when I watch him, I see him as like a chancer, like all of us, who's done it and done it well. And I'm like, having achieved this. You know?
What drama school did you go to, Howell?
Rose Bruford College of Speech and Drama.
Oh, really? Okay. I know that.
Hello, Jamie.
Hi.
Oh, my God. Have I called you
mobile? Are you by the side of a road?
I've called you mobile.
Yeah, you've called my mobile, yeah.
Oh. Well, then I'll try another
Try another way. The Skype's updating on my phone, so that
brilliant.
Might be why it called.
Brilliant. You're useless.
Yeah.
Have you been watching the tennis, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
No, I've been at the meal. I'm literally walking back from the meal here.
Walking back from the pub.
The tennis?
Pub where the tennis is on, yeah?
Nothing. What's happening to the tennis?
Nothing. Speaking of
Howell's accusing you of of Jamie Cameron.
Yeah. Now he's going to be Googling Wimbledon instead of answering the phone to us. Anyway, that's how I see Ewan McGregor, and I see him as one of those actors who just extend themselves, and I suppose because I've watched all of Long Way Round with him and Charlie Borman. And Long Way Down and all of that. Have you seen those? Did you watch any of those documentaries?
No.
I see. Well, I think you should watch those, especially the first one, Long Way Round. It's just a brilliant adventure documentary. And in a way, when you know him, you see that he's got a lot of energy. Like, he's a very charming, very energetic guy. And whenever I've seen him acting as a result, I've thought, oh, he's toning himself down a lot. which I think the
good
energy
grief, really, he's actually toned up from his performances
big
when
time.
He's in real life,
big time. And
I don't think I would be able to stand him,
not in an annoying way, just in a super friendly way. He's just a very nice guy, super nice guy, and funny and a bit rock and roll and all that. And I think it comes out of his eyes. I think that's why you've got a problem with his eyes. Jamie,
you're hearing it correctly. I'm opening the podcast by slagging off critically and popularly acclaimed actor Ewan McGregor.
Listen, I'm not saying, can I just step in here?
Yeah.
Ewan, right? I'm not saying Ewan McGregor is one of my favourite actors. I'm not even saying I think he's a very, very good actor.
I am.
But I think he's very good in this. Like, I think he's very good. I only watched one episode, by the way.
Oh, God. Right. Well,
that's one more than I've watched, Jamie. So,
if you remember, Jamie, Matt was here watching the first series, but he only watched episode one. He still has only watched episode one. Matt has just kindly been the only one of our box set podders who's volunteered themselves tonight. So, but I think this makes for interesting listening because... firstly, your issue with Ewan McGregor is made more funny because in this Fargo, he's playing twin brothers. You get two Ewans.
Double McGregor.
And I'll say this, Jamie, I don't know if you agree by this point. I think it adds to his acting chops that I genuinely forget that it's two.
Yes.
That it's not two different actors. It's not just a wig.
Yeah. I've only watched one episode, sorry, but I think it's a really, like, I accepted immediately that these were two separate, originally, like, the first scene when you see the different versions of Ewan, there is a sort of, you do kind of check out the prosthetics and the makeup.
Yeah, but for a moment, kind of, I actually said, oh, that's Ewan McGregor. Like, I bought it as a different character first.
Right, okay. I knew immediately, but once they have their scene together very early on in the first episode, you forget, and that from that point on, it feels very natural, and very accepted, and just very like. I'm going to say I didn't like the second series of Fargo. I know that was the one that a lot of people loved. My mum and dad loved it. They were going on about how Kirsten Dunst was amazing and all this. And I agree, it was a good one, but I loved the first series of Fargo. And I feel like this one has started really well. Like, it's really funny but dark, and it has that edge that I really liked about the first series.
Mm. What they've gone with... I'm going to jump straight to my kind of conclusion here because I think it might help stimulate debate, right? But... this is one of my favourite series that I've ever watched, Fargo Series 3. And I'll tell you for why. You both know that recently on the podcast we've discussed three particular things that are kind of recurring discussions with us in the modern world of box sets. One is pace. One is cliffhangers in order to stretch a series out into another series, into another season. And whodunits, right, to hang stuff on. Now, what the Coen brothers and the writer, whose name escapes me, who's brilliant, what they've done with this is they've created a pattern to the story. It begins with the title, "This is a true story," which it's not. In this series, they've dropped the true word, so it fades out. It just says, "This is a story," which is nice. But
that's the producers stepping in there.
But they have followed the same idea, which is a very Coen Brothers thing, which is that a character makes a decision, and in a very darkly comic, farcical way, more and more shit's thrown at them until something really bad happens, and probably most of the cast will die in some way by the end of it. Now, that pattern solves my whodunit thing, because it's like, I know what is going to happen... I know who's done something, and now the joy of this is watching, just like a football game. I know that it will be 90 minutes, potentially with some extra time on top, right? So the rules are set out from the beginning, if you like, by the time you get to Series 3. The pace, as a result, doesn't have to worry about the next series. So the pace is only as slow as it needs to be. And the pace is so well judged. It's slightly better than some Coen Brothers stuff is paced, I think. It's beautifully shot. Almost every shot you can pause, and the cinematography, it's like they must have taken a week just to set up that this shot of this door with the light coming through it at night. And like, it's beautiful cinematography. The acting is always brilliant. The Fargo accent is great. Even Ewan McGregor does 90% well on that, and he's not the best at accents. And so it solves.
It's always nice to have a funny accent.
Yeah. It solves for me, just naturally by its nature, by its form, it solves all of the issues that I've been having recently about eking things out and teasing me too much and all of that. It's a fun thing to watch in the same way that the popcorn stuff that we talk about is fun to watch, in the same way you might watch Star Trek and you know there's going to be a little fable and it'll be wrapped up by the end. Well, it's not popcorn, but it has that same, okay, I know what I'm getting myself in for, mixed with the high quality that we're seeing in those things we've discussed recently, like Handmaid's Tale and things like that. That the level of perfectionism over the shooting of it is just brilliant. And I would put it down, and the best thing for you, Matt, is that, and for anybody listening who hasn't seen the first two series, is take your pick. You don't need to watch the other two series. You can start on this one, you know, which we're only sort of 5 or 6 episodes into at the moment as it's released in the UK. I don't know what happens yet. But it's just so much fun, and it's great, again, to see something that is both fun and really artistically sound, you know, has a great integrity to it. That's my sell to you, Matthew, and I think it's evident from episode one, Jamie.
I think so too. I think, like, you made some good points there. I think I want to go back to the accent, because I think it's really important. Like, one of the biggest things about Fargo, the film and the series, that they like, that it's about, is like the reality of criminals and crime and murderers. They're not like some kind of, yeah, they're sad. Yeah. And they're sort of like, they're not Bond villains. They're like kind of pathetic people who have pathetic motives. And what's great about Fargo is the accent. The accent immediately like pricks at the, you know, the danger and the idea that these people are malevolent, kind of horrible forces. You see them for the sort of like in this really sort of sad and kind of comedic accent. It really takes away almost the seriousness of some of the dark and the darkness of the show, but it kind of mixes really well. And you know, I mean, the guy who's taken over the process of creating the show, I've forgotten his name now, but he's done an amazing job of like keeping that theme and expressing it over a series. And Fargo and a lot of Coen Brothers material would work well over the series of a TV show, because it's so, there's so much depth to it.
Yeah,
I've always thought that they could do that with a lot of different films. Yeah. Miller's Crossing would make a great film.
Yeah, quite
TV
often
show.
The depth outweighs the plot, because you can't kind of have both
in
a film.
Yeah. And sometimes that you almost like you want to stay in their worlds quite a lot more than you get a chance to. And they can be disappointing endings at times, but at the same time you really enjoy the journey. So it's
when you say that the endings are disappointing, are you talking about the films or the TV shows?
Sorry, yeah, the films, yeah, not the TV series. No.
Okay.
The TV shows actually give they pull it off really well. Like you said, they sometimes do it almost better than it's like doing Coen Brothers better than the Coen. It's like, you know, Steve Coogan is working with these two Gibbon brothers and a lot of his Partridge stuff now.
Yeah, and it's the best stuff I've ever done.
The best stuff he's done is Scissored Isle, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's the Gibbons brothers pretty much doing a lot. Obviously, Steve's involved.
It's kind of fan fiction by really talented fans. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the same process with Fargo in a way, that you've got someone who really gets them, is really talented and knows how to deliver what they do in the form of a TV show really, really well. So it's brilliant.
And Matt, the added carrot for you on this one is that David Thewlis plays the bad guy in it. This almost mythical bad guy. And I don't know what the mythical, maybe one of you two knows. I have in the back of my mind, there is a mythical creature or a number of them who can't eat. Food is doesn't go in. It's like they represent death or whatever. Anyway,
what?
There's a mythical creature in classic stories that can't eat, that doesn't eat, because it represents like death and stuff, and I can't remember what it is. Anyway, he's okay. Playing this kind of character, and it's another sign where, like, if you didn't know, and clearly I don't, but if you didn't know about mythical creatures, it doesn't matter. It's just that the depth that goes beneath this is not, it's comic and it's dramatic as well. And he's brilliant. David Thewlis is just brilliant. And again, playing a character that is like the other ones, like with the Fargo accent and like Ewan McGregor's characters, it would be really interesting to see what you think of it, Matt, because I think the comic edge of it, they are quite exaggerated characters. And I can imagine people going, oh, I don't quite buy this guy because it's too ridiculous. But the backdrop and the world that surrounds them and the depth that they play it, I think, isn't ridiculous. It's kind of really well studied and really well thought out. And it's just a series that's attracting really decent names if you respect Ewan McGregor and certainly David Thewlis. David Thewlis is a man who's had a phenomenal career of picking great stuff to be in, you know. And yeah, it's just got everything. It's got atmosphere, it's horror, it's comedy, it's drama, it's just, oh, I love it so much. It really is. I would swap all of the things we've talked about for about the last 20 weeks just to save Fargo, you know. If I was getting on a spaceship, it would win out of all of them. I just love it.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant. I mean, think you'd really enjoy it, Mac, because you're a dramatist.
It's an actor's dream, Matt. This would, you'd love to be in a show like Fargo.
Thank you. I would love to be in any single one of the shows that we've ever talked about. Absolutely, including the ones that I have not liked. I'd
love to be in Chuck.
I would give my right arm to be in Chuck.
That would be great.
Well, yeah. What else? Wait, Matt, ask us questions. How likely is it you're going to go and get more for and watch this?
I don't know, man. I don't know. There's something about these. I don't know what it is. And I think what has gone a long way to hurting your cause is how much my dad enjoys these shows.
What's wrong with your dad?
Can I just say that is the finest example of a snob, right? Is going, I won't try this food because I've just seen him eat it.
No, but like dad and I, we used to get on so well with our taste.
Yeah.
And in the last, I guess it's been a slow burn over about 10 years. I've just stopped respecting his choices.
How about this? And you watch Fargo, and if you enjoy it, we do an episode where we call your dad and we capture the moment where you once again rekindle basically what is gone, which is the love between
them. I'm not saying it's not that we never agree on anything now. It's just that
you just don't love him anymore.
I don't I love him very much. But I don't trust his judgment on films, television, and books.
But surely it's possible that it's found a wide audience and is awesome, isn't it?
Hang on, no, you're misreading me entirely. I like plenty of things that are popular. It's specifically my dad.
What was the breaking point, Matt? What was the book, film, or TV show that tipped the edge?
He's a big Jack Reacher fan.
Okay.
Well, Jack Reacher's great.
But he doesn't like the films.
Oh.
Okay.
And I absolutely love the first Jack Reacher film. Yeah. I think it's
great fun.
Freaking brilliant.
Yeah, but I mean, have you read the book?
No.
How many people read books and then say that they didn't like the film because they've read the book? I mean, that's just, everybody says that. So come on, what was the second thing after that? That's just novel versus film.
All right, okay. He's just, every book that he's recommended to me has, I've just, this is turning into me slagging off my dad now. he's just into murder mysteries, and they're just like, he used to read real books.
I love your dad. I would like to say, if we can get your dad to listen to this, if you want to adopt me and disown Matt, you sound exactly my kind of guy.
I tell you the one that broke it actually was when I lent him. Have either of you read The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen?
No.
It's one of the best books I've ever read.
Ooh.
And Dad never finished it because he said he kept falling asleep.
See, I knew it would be that way round. I knew it wasn't going to be that your dad loved, you know, Home and Away or Baywatch.
It's the Matt was slighted.
It was going to be that the way round where you recommended something and he stepped on your toe. He hurt your pride and didn't finish the book, and that's why you're angry with him.
No, but also he kept on going on about the this, we're not going to agree on this either, but he kept on going on about the Scandi noirs. You know, it's like every time I asked him what him and my stepmom were watching, it was always some other bullshit Swedish thing. That ultimately was about a murder and someone solving it.
Yeah,
they just fell into a pit of detective drama.
Well, yeah, and but I think that's, we've kind of discussed this before. But I think I felt that way about those things as well. And I think, firstly, as with everything, if you didn't watch them, we should shut the fuck up. But also, it was a time that was the first wave of really great kind of alternative to mainstream TV for people like your parents and my parents, because my parents were the same. Suddenly they found access to something that really was very different from watching Only Fools and Horses or whatever is the modern equivalent. So just because they liked it then, it doesn't mean... I would say Fargo is better than all of that and probably benefits from that having existed. You know, we've learned from... the writers have learned from everything that's come before. It's just that in a way your dad was first on the bandwagon. He was the trendsetter, and you couldn't deal with that. You couldn't deal with your dad being cooler than you,
with him and everyone else having a big murder bonus.
Pushed it deep down in yourself and turned it into hatred, and now you haven't spoken for 10 years. Well, I think you're a terrible son.
We work together.
Oh,
he's my boss.
Yeah, so really? You have to talk to him, eh?
he's also our number one source of childcare. So
right, so you better show up. Has he ever listened to one of these podcasts?
He has actually. Yeah, we listened to one on the way back from the Cotswolds recently. It was the one about. Which one was it? I picked one where I thought I was particularly good.
Rich, please tell us which one it was.
Yeah.
I can't remember now. I really can't. I wish I could remember. Oh. Maybe it wasn't the one about girls. It might have been the one about girls, actually.
And was he sat there going, Matt, it's a comedy?
No, hang on. No, it wasn't that one, because it was something that he likes and that I like as well, and that you guys didn't like.
Oh, bonding.
I wish I could remember what it was.
Let it come to you. We need to know.
He didn't like you much, Howell. Sorry.
Well, that's normal. See, it's easy to hate the captain.
I was actually very proud of him when he made an observation that I would have made about
you. This is going to hurt. This is going to hurt.
No.
Go on.
I can't remember what it was, but he basically... You were off on one of your metaphors.
Yep.
And he said he doesn't know what he's talking about anymore, does he?
Well, you'll be absolutely right. Like, that's used as an insult to people, but in my case, it's actually true that I'll have forgotten what I was on about halfway through.
Yeah, you forgot your point, yeah.
Yeah, so fair play to him, yeah.
No, you know what? I'll give Fargo a crack. I'm watching a couple of things at the moment, but I haven't got anything major on the go. And I finished Glow, so...
It would be a shame if you missed it before it left all four, because I really do.
Oh, is it only on there for a while, is it?
Yeah, and I think if you call it something else in your head, whatever baggage you bring to it about Ewan McGregor and that, try and start with a blank slate, because I would have put you down as a man of taste, and this is for people of taste, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Better than Breaking Bad?
Do you know that? Oh. How interesting you should say that. I just watched the episode called Better Call Saul of Breaking Bad the other day just to see how different the character is. And I've started, like, late night when I'm working on stuff, I've started putting it on again. It's great, Breaking Bad, isn't it? It's great.
I mean, it's hard. Actually, it's an interesting comparison because there's a, like, dark comedic element of Breaking Bad.
It's better second time Breaking Bad, I think, because of that. You notice how much shtick is going on between him and Jesse much, much more because you, the stakes aren't as terrifying for you. You're not so worried about what's going to happen, you know.
I always found their relationship deeply frustrating.
Because he because they didn't get on in... Is it because they didn't, like... I'm watching it again now. I think once you've set something up, because Jesse was supposed to be just in the first series, and then they liked him so much they kept him. And if you bear that in mind, you go, well, they've got to stick to the idea, the initial sell, that Bryan Cranston's character is going to get nastier and nastier, right? Once you decide that Jesse has to remain within that, then you've got this difficult thing, because actually, in any other series and actually in life, he would have gained great affection, not just occasional episodic affection, but great affection for this guy, for his partner. But you can't because he's got to turn on him and he's got to be cruel to everybody. And I think that's the difficult thing in their relationship. So the episode I've just watched is when they go out to the desert and the van breaks down, and they do bond, they fall out loads, but they survive, and he finds out he's not dying of cancer as in the same episode. And you really get this, like, you want them to hug and kiss kind of thing. And from that point on, traditionally, they would have been bosom buddies, but they can't. They have to keep driving this wedge between them. I think that's the problem. He doesn't know what he's talking about anymore.
No. I thought you kept focused on that one.
Yeah, I was quite focused. I'm just thinking about your dad listening now.
He doesn't listen anymore.
So, is it better than Breaking Bad? Well,
no, it's not. I mean, it's not better than that, but it doesn't necessarily.
Know, Jamie, that you've got an unjustifiable love for Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. So
I just appreciate quality storytelling.
We don't want to do this again, Jamie?
No, but the thing is, I know I lost that argument, and I've been thinking about lots of different points since that argument, and it's been annoying me. But
you want another go? You want another go?
No, I'm not ready.
Okay, let's have another go. Look,
we're not going to have another go.
Good.
I have them written down. I don't have them on me. I want them on me before I start.
Well, that ruins the game.
I won't be baited. Have you kept on with The Handmaid's Tale, by the way?
Yes, very good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very good, isn't it? It's just so sad. Like, every episode, you kind of end it and go, oh, this is a horrible world.
Oh, I haven't felt that so much, because I feel like now that they're done setting up the world and they're just letting the characters run, it's more about the kind of the intrigue rather than just the bludgeoning bleakness of it all.
Well,
it's a suspense thriller now.
I've just started on where they've gone to. I've only just started the latest episode, so I'll just give you. I'll talk in vague terms. And
I haven't seen this week's. Okay,
neither have I.
Well, this week they've kind of gone to an alternative storyline, somebody else's storyline, and again, I cannot escape my argument of stretching things out. It reeks to me, and to go back to. And I still love it. I just go, I know what you're doing here. Whereas,
what argument of stretching things out? You didn't make any argument about stretching things out. What the hell is going on?
That's all I talked about on the Handmaid's Tale one. That they.
You talked about it being slow.
Yeah, but because they are eyeing up a second series, whereas the novel, it goes slower than the novel reads, because the novel knows. That it
right. Oh, okay.
To write
Sorry,
a second
I thought you
novel.
Meant using suspense to stretch something out, which is something you mentioned at the start of this podcast.
Right.
Okay.
No, more just that it's like, oh, and now we'll follow the plot of the bread loaf in the kitchen because we want
Do you episode. Really feel they're taking too long over stuff?
Yes. But
I couldn't disagree more.
That's a small yes. It's a really small yes. I want to say I think it's brilliant and I love it and it's great. But to bring it back to Fargo does not ever do that, even though it's very Coen Brothers, and they do that a lot. They're not, it's like that you are kept moving at a pace that I don't think signifies that it's trying to earn another series out of it or get a certain number of episodes. And
yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Yeah,
I think that Jamie is where Breaking Bad loses to Fargo, because of like the example that I've just said about their relationship. It is brilliant writing. It surprises you all the time. It's great, but you know that it has to keep surprising you and keep surprising you. And there's going to be five series probably. They've got the long game in mind all the time. With Fargo, it's a short game in mind, but with high quality. And we don't see that anywhere. Name for me one other TV series that has completely different stories in every series.
True Detective.
All right. and Black Mirror. But yeah, that's episodic. Yeah. But other than those three, name one for me.
No, and you can't, but I don't always see that as a positive. Like, I like following a story over, and I get Fargo, what Fargo's doing. It's doing it very well, and I'm a fan of it. But to criticize the idea of doing every series as a separate story, I do find it a little bit like I lose engagement and I have to reset with a new series. I didn't necessarily start this series. In fact, I only started this series because of the podcast.
Right.
I wouldn't probably have even started it.
Right.
Because I wasn't that enamored with the last series, or I did enjoy it, but not to the extent that I did enjoy the first series. So I was like, well, it's a new story, great. It's got Ewan McGregor, who I don't mind, but I'm kind of nonplussed about.
I wonder if you'd enjoy the second series now, going back, knowing what the game is. Do you know what I mean? Like, I found the second series slow to get going, but a lot of that was me in my head going, are they going to weave back in the characters from the first series? And so there was a certain frustration and letdown with it. But actually, as a whole, when you think back to the plot and what happens in it, and especially that crazy, surprising moment in it and stuff, it's just brilliant. It's such delightful, brilliantly made TV. I cannot wait to watch the next one.
Well, that was what was good about. I watched the episode one last night, and it did remind me, like, oh, you know what? This is really good. This is actually made by people who know how to, like, really craft a really clever story with brilliant characters. Yeah. And I do love, like, I love that world, and I do love, like, the effort they make, and you really get into sort of the gritty world, and the plots that they create are wonderful.
Yeah,
but I forgot that
Matt Stone and Trey Parker and the Coen brothers are like two sides of the same coin, aren't they? In that they don't have to make anything, so there isn't the producer pressure, there isn't the need to kind of they genuinely only get involved with stuff when it interests them. And they've exec produced this, and they've put their name to it, and they've put the name of Fargo to it, and it just feels like something that is made with true integrity. It isn't something that's like Handmaid's Tale, that is nonetheless brilliantly made and brilliantly acted, but you know that there's a big machine that's going, oh, we need this to move on to the next series. It's like, it's just got that feel of like, hey, do you want to come to an art gallery and look at some fucking amazing pictures? It's like that.
But I mean, sorry, I can only really talk about The Handmaid's Tale because I haven't seen Fargo. But surely they've gone, the book is this long and it's going to take us three series to do.
Well, if they have, they're still, it's the same thing. I mean, I'm not implying.
Why? Because there's you're talking about two things with a finite story. One is longer.
I'm not implying that Handmaid's Tale's improvised every week and they're going make it last longer. I just think a story, sometimes there is a rhythm.
You prefer short stories.
Well, I think that a novel has a certain internal rhythm for the reader, and this, what they're doing is transposing something into three novels. That's what it feels like. I'm talking about feelings here, but it feels like it's three novels when it should be one in some cases.
Yeah,
the BBC could do it in three parts. It wouldn't be as good, but there's a middle ground. There's potentially a middle ground of fewer episodes, which the American networks wouldn't go for.
And you're saying this without having seen the full series or read the novel?
Yeah, I could just feel it. It's just like, I could just feel it.
How much feel it in my bones.
How much has really happened?
My thumbs tingle and I know.
I think there is a problem with the show. If you are noticing that, if you feel that they're deliberately slowing things down, then obviously the show isn't working completely for you. Otherwise, that's not, because that isn't their aim. They want you to feel like you're enjoying the kind of journey, however slow it might be, and you're not noticing they are stretching certain parts of the book out, even if you've not read the book, you know. So if you're noticing that, there is something flawed in the actual storytelling for you anyway.
For me.
Isn't there?
And I'm not saying that about other things that are slow, certainly not The Wire, which is arguably a slow thing. It's a slow burn. I don't watch that and go, okay, we get it. And I think it's because The Wire isn't, and Fargo isn't. They're not imagined dystopian futures where we're saying, now look at how things could become, right? Now, when you do that, you've got a certain amount of mileage, I think, that is before an audience may get fatigued. You need to draw conclusions as to how we can solve, fight, avoid this dystopian future. And we haven't received any of those, or well, not much of that kind of how to escape this prison. We haven't really achieved any of that within six episodes. And I think in less free worlds, it would have benefited on network TV, for example. It might be awful for lots of reasons that we love it, but it would have benefited from that. It would have benefited from get to, you know, solve that quicker. So it's this particular type of story that I feel that is the reason why you feel it's so miserable, Jamie. Your description of it is it's so sad and miserable. I think something that's really sad and miserable has to have an element of hope that works as fast as the misery, you know, as the misery goes deep.
Well, I mean, and I do have some, like, I'm clinging to the hope that Elizabeth Moss's character is going to find a way out of this situation. And I think, by the way, Elizabeth Moss is amazing. Like, she's brilliant in it as well.
Brilliant.
I do think that the show's strength is, though, that it kind of feels like one of the biggest strengths of the show is that you go, holy shit, this isn't that. This is only like a couple of degrees from the way our society could go.
Yeah, and you know, that thought one of the strengths doesn't last very long. That thought can last half an episode. Now, once you've got that, once you've got that point...
It depends on your attention span, doesn't it?
Well, it depends on
your intelligence. Or your willingness to investigate an idea.
Oh, I'm willing to investigate it. It's just that it's the difference between... I used to hate, at drama school especially, I used to hate things that wallowed in something that was very sad. It's the difference between allowing an audience to feel and experience some misery as part of a story and actually making an audience miserable. Now, they're very different things. And in my book, entertainment and stuff that has a point to it like this shouldn't actually just make Jamie fucking suicidal every episode. It should crack on in some way other than that. And it feels...
I don't think it does. I think that's completely... just very smeary with how you're talking about it.
Says the man who said Ewan McGregor's eyes annoy him. Smeary.
Well, they do. I'm not saying everything he does annoys me, or that he's incapable of doing good things. But they find what they do is they make it about the things that you... it's relative, isn't it? The things that make her feel good now in this world are relative to the things that made her feel good in the previous world.
I get that.
And the little glances and the little pieces of contact between her and Nick become these incredible romantic crescendos.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really brilliant, and it's a real commitment to the world.
I'm not saying that we're driving 40 on the motorway. I'm saying we're driving 65, and I'm going, look, you can make us feel slightly. I'm saying that perhaps the reason that we're not going 70 is something to do with the fact that people are making a program that they want it to last for another series. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I'm not at that stage. You have no problem with
the weight in Jamie's case or the pace in my case, however we describe it. You have no criticism of that in The Handmaid's Tale, Matt?
No, I think it's pretty much perfect.
Wow.
Do you think, is this for you, Matt? Is this the most perfect show you've ever seen?
No, it's up there though. I said that last when we talked about it last time. I said it's the best thing I've seen for ages. Mm. And I mean, this is just going to show how far apart we are in what we like the most.
Go on.
But the things that we've talked about that have been produced in the time where the show has been happening that I've liked the most have been The Handmaid's Tale and Transparent.
Well, yeah, but I didn't go beyond episode one of Transparent, and I was probably way too harsh on it. I can see its merits already. I might have enjoyed it, and again, I'm talking about. I'm really, of all the criticisms I make of things, I'm talking about something that's quite subtle with this because I'm loving it. I think it's brilliant. I think it's an amazing piece of TV. It just that when I watch Fargo, I at no point feel like the author's hand is getting too obvious to me. And that can happen with Coen Brothers films, actually, where you can go, okay. Even The Big Lebowski, which is one of my favourite films ever, The Big Lebowski can be quite hard work to sit and watch in a whole sitting because it's very long. There's about 20 plots in and out of each other. And so sometimes their sort of authorage can be just a little bit too heavy. And in this case, it just feels, because it's such an imagined future, it's almost, well, it's science fiction almost, isn't it? It's like all good science fiction, it's got a big metaphorical points going on and big philosophical points, but you have to, yeah, it just, I don't know, it just doesn't.
I think it comes down 100%. To, for you, Howell, the difference between you and Matt is you're on opposite ends of a certain spectrum here of what you enjoy in tea. The fact that Matt likes Transparent and Handmaid's Tale a great deal, both of those, Matt, would I be right in saying that you are happier within a bleaker tone of a TV show? You can sit within a bleaker world setting to an extent, yeah?
Matt's just a happier person than me, despite his outlook. And I'm a more miserable person. But then,
I'll answer Jamie's question a bit. I think that the best drama investigates the things that are problematic and difficult, finds interesting ways of showing those things to you and makes you think about them. But yeah. I also have a huge place in my heart for silliness and action films. And one of my favorite actors is Tom Cruise, for Christ's sake.
Great actor.
I love his films so much.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that you don't have that within you. I'm just saying you have the ability to sit in a world of bleakness and accept it and enjoy it longer than Howell would do, who's going to sort of look very quickly for that kernel of hope within that environment than you would.
Is possible, but I would say this in my defense. I would say that because I spent so many years directing drama, being around drama, all of that stuff, I was obsessed with techniques of making sure that you could have really great quality, but also look after the pace, look after, use tricks to to do that stuff. And there's nothing that you just described. I wouldn't say we're on different ends of any spectrum, because everything that you just said about your taste from Tom Cruise to drama, I am 100% I agree with it. And again, I really, really, really like The Handmaid's Tale. I just watch stuff and I go, sometimes drama can get away with more than comedy can get away with. If you mess a comedy up, it is instantly noticeable, within 1% missing the target, right? You've got to hit the bullseye or it's just off. Drama, whenever I've seen it, can sometimes rely on your love of exploring those themes and the novel, the themes of the novel. It can rely on that stuff more. And I think that Fargo doesn't rest on its laurels at any point, whereas I think in Handmaid's Tale, it probably does for the sake of 12 minutes of an episode that could be cut, you know, a little faster. It's just a feeling that I have when I'm watching it that I go, oh, I'm slightly ahead of this, and it's not that
it is interesting that, like, when you talk about what you'd like, Matt, and you talk about Transparent and Handmaid's Tale, actually Fargo probably fits quite nicely into that world, because it's it is a bleak, not that I'm saying you're just completely bleak, I know you've got many different facets, and I'm not saying either side is bad, by the way, of what you know is taste. So what I'm saying is that Fargo actually fits nicely into that kind of slot of what you would exactly like. It's got brilliant, like, performances within this, you know, dark and twisted at times world, but there's also a great kind of clown comedic element to it as well.
Yeah, I don't think in a million years you're going to watch Fargo and not come back to me and go, the performances in Fargo, you know, because Ewan McGregor's in it. You're going to say The Handmaid's Tale wins a million miles. But that said, it is for me. It's really not. I don't want to badmouth Handmaid's Tale at all. It was a very academic, stupid, if you like, point that I was making about it. But the reason I was making it was just to say this. Whatever issue I have with that, when I watch Fargo, I don't have it. And it's glorious. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm watching something that I wish I'd made, but I don't know how I'd do it, you know? Handmaid's Tale, I watch and I go, yeah, me and Matt could make this. We could make this if we were given the time and the budget. Yeah, with the
you think a lot of us
because of the time and budget and actors. And if we were given,
I couldn't make that.
I would love to see Matt as the handmaid.
Let's do a YouTube version. Oh my God, let's do a YouTube version. I'll direct it. Matt plays the main character, and we'll just do the sex scenes.
I'll be the commander.
And on let's leave it. Timing. This is turning into a long podcast. So, Matthew, please watch it. Let us know what you think. Give it a go. I just think it's well up your street. Right up
there. Yeah, it's like if you were on Amazon, Matt, and you just bought Handmaid's Tale, and you just bought... what's the other word? Transparent. It would say you also might like Fargo season 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah,
okay.
Bang in the middle. Good. Yes, no answer. Do you generally like Coen Brothers stuff, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, you can love it then. That's it. Nail in the coffin. Done. Watch it. You'll love it.
We'll see.
Coen Brothers. okay, next week, Glow. We're talking about the gorgeous Glow. Ladies of wrestling. As usual, if you want to email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. I'd particularly like to hear from Mr. Wandless, Matthew's dad. That would be
oh, please.
Please get in touch. Let us know if you want to be in our YouTube version of The Handmaid's Tale as well, Matthew's dad.